welcome. It's tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up in this hour, continuing series featuring the first of two-part stories. Later on, episode one of two of The Man Behind the Gun with a special storyline. But first, it's Destination Freedom with part one of the story Black Hamlet. Heard on WMAQ in Chicago on August 14, 1949.
Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Out of the chaotic 18th century's grab for goods and gold and land and slaves to milk the magic out of the new land, there arose three giants from among the slaves of the Caribbean: Toussaint Louverture, Dessalines, and Henri Christophe, giants who liberated the island of Haiti and established a new state. Destination Freedom tells the story of one of these new world liberators. In a chapter entitled Black Hamlet, we bring you the first section from the life story of King Henri Christophe of Haiti.
In Haiti, in the heart of the Caribbean, there's an old legend about the waves that lick the side of the mountains like hungry tongues. They say at twilight on the mountain near the northern coast that juts out from the land like a devil's fist, King Christophe walks as he walked 100 years ago when he first climbed the cliffs upon which he built his castle and in which he destroyed himself. They say King Christophe begins to walk the lonely halls of his castle in his tomb and retraces the steps that brought him from the rock piles on the island of Grenada to the high mountains of Haiti. In the darkness of his corridor, they say the dead king walks and recalls the day he watched the older slaves tramp single file, carrying stones to build a fortress. And he watched idly while the overseer called out,
"Hurry! Hurry! Lift up the feet! Hurry! Hurry!"
And Farron, the plantation master, had come down to watch, and he was impatient.
"Overseer, can't you get him to work faster? They're slowing down."
"Hurry there! Move faster! Hurry!"
"This way it'll take a year to get enough stones up the hill to build anything."
"I am doing the best I can, monsieur."
"Well, that's not good enough. Faster."
"If I drive them harder, there'll only be more who will fall out."
"Then put more slaves on the line."
"Every able slave's working on the rock now. You forget. You have used all the slaves you had."
"Yeah, you're right. Now go on then, but drive harder."
"Naturally, monsieur."
"Hey, wait, overseer."
"Monsieur?"
"I thought you said every able slave on the plantation."
"I did, monsieur. I've called every one." "Oh, you're looking at the children."
"Well, they just stand around watching."
"The children, monsieur. They come down to be near their folks."
"But we need more help on the line."
"Well, yes, monsieur, but we can't..."
"Well?"
"They can't lift the stones. It would be killing them for nothing."
"What about that tall boy there? Who's he?"
"His uncle works on the line."
"He's thin, but I think there's strength in that body." "Yeah, I think I've discovered another slave who's ready to earn his keep."
And they say the plantation owner discovered Christophe playing and started him on his lonely walk towards the throne. They say the plantation owner eyed the gangling lad, felt his scrawny arms and back, and asked,
"Name?"
"Henri Christophe."
"Well, Henri, the overseer here says you're too young for the work of a mason. Wouldn't you like to learn the trade?"
"I always wanted to learn how to build, monsieur. I've asked to be taught."
"Well, forgive my negligence, but I own so many slaves, it's impossible to give them all the proper attention."
"Yes, monsieur."
"Overseer, you can start him out now. I've got another hand for you. Test him."
"Well, sir, if you don't mind, I would rather wait."
"Test him!"
"Yes."
"In this trade, boy, in this work, one begins at the bottom by lifting that rock there. It belongs up the hill where we're building. Lift it."
"Monsieur..."
"Would you rather exchange places with the boy, overseer?"
"Oh, no, no, of course not."
"Then obey me. well, boy?
I'm trying to lift it, sir. I'm trying.
Overseer, the boy goes about his work in a very dull manner. Suppose you give him some inspiration.
Monsieur,
your whip would inspire him to straighten his back.
Will you?
Again! Again! Now, let him get in line behind the others. If he drops the stone, inspire him again. He stands there holding it. I knew there was some strength in that bony frame. Now move, boy. Move.
He doesn't move, monsieur. He just stands there, staring at him, holding the stone.
Give him the inspiration to move. Give it to him.
Monsieur.
Watch out! He's trying to swing the rock at me! Watch out!
And in the initiation ceremony, the slave who was destined one day to be king flung the stone towards the plantation owner and struggled with the master while the whip rose and fell, and finally fell Christophe.
He's down. I told you, monsieur. He was a wild one.
He must have a hurricane wrapped in that thin body of his.
You still want me to put him on the rock pile? He won't last under the lashes.
Tickle him with the whip again. Now, when he wakes, put him on the rocks and see that he carries his weight in stone. Yes, maybe you're right. Maybe he won't last. If his kind doesn't last, it'll be the best thing that could happen to the slave system. See that none of the other slaves help him carry his load. Let him carry his own cross.
All right, boy, on your feet, quickly!
And when the whip rose and fell, he pulled his thin frame from the ground and got into the rock pile line, and for 5 years melted inside the long line that moved up the hill. And if he had an inspiration at all, it was not the whip, but the sight of ships coming into the bay. One day he stopped atop the hill and looked down at the free sea, and his uncle warned him.
Don't stop here. The master's looking. Up by the ridge if you want to rest. Come on, follow me.
And the thin boy followed, and soon they stopped near the top of the cliff and looked down.
It's better up here. Much better. I see you like to look at the ships.
They look so free. And
some of them are free.
Which ones are free? Where do they go?
Oh, there are other islands. Jamaica, Santo Domingo, Cuba. I've been a slave on all of them. You escape here, it's worse than Cuba.
And do the ships sail past Cuba?
Even past Cuba, it's the same, Henri. There's America, the British colonies and the mainland.
If I could get there...
Slaves there too, son.
There must be some place where there's no slave. Only free men.
I don't know of any. Oh, careful, the guard's looking...
In this United States, you say there are slaves, too?
Yes, but...
Is that why so many ships sail that way?
Well, yes, but for other reasons.
Go on, tell me.
Careful. There's a war going on in that country.
A war?
Yes. Those French pirates you see down there on the docks.
I've watched them.
They're waiting to get aboard that ship. You see it?
Who are they?
They're volunteers for this war... They say it's going up in America.
Why?
Yes. Hey, you see them down there, lining up on the dock. America's where they're going. The colonies are fighting against the British, they say.
What are they fighting for?
Freedom.
If I should fight along beside them...
No danger. You'll never leave the rocks. Oh, watch it now, heads down.
If I could, would I be free?
I don't know. They say some of the slaves from Santo Domingo volunteered to fight in Savannah. What'll happen when they've won freedom for the colonists, I couldn't say.
I would like to find out.
Bend your back, work.
If I could get aboard one of those boats...
Oh, heads down. The master's coming.
The master came and saw the boy and the old slave working together and passed on. And when night came, the boy took another step on the road that led to the throne. In his tent that night, his uncle heard a stirring and called.
Henri, Henri, where are you?
Hush, uncle. I'm right here beside you.
Oh, you got your clothes on. What are you doing?
I wanted to tell you. I'm leaving.
Oh, you're out of your head.
I mean it.
They've doubled the guard, you know that.
Uncle, are you going with me?
Where?
To fight in America.
You're still thinking about that?
I'm going.
Son, they'll have dogs after you as soon as you're out of here.
Uncle.
Listen, son, I've escaped a dozen times. I know when it's wise to try and when it's foolish. You can't get aboard a ship. They've got the docks watched you.
I'll find a way.
You'll throw your life away.
Why should I save it to be a slave? Come with me, Uncle.
If I thought for a moment I could, I...
I'll help you. I can swim for both of us.
Never mind. I couldn't make it. You'd have to go up the cliff, gamble or jump down into the bay.
I'll take that gamble.
Yes, I see you will. But over the cliff, it'll kill you.
Then let it kill me. Good night, Uncle.
And he eased out from under the tent and got into the Caribbean, melted his black body into the night while the guards came down to the slave tents checking the tenants.
Honoré Christophe and Elder Christophe, answer when you are spoken to.
I'm here, monsieur.
What's the matter with your nephew? Can't he answer? Honoré. Where is Honoré? Guards, get out the dogs. Get the dogs out.
They got out the dogs and they picked up the boy's trail. And the shots rang out as he climbed up the mountain towards the cliff. And the hounds drew closer as he came to the clearing and saw before him the dark, open span of ocean and the long leap down to the bay. He stopped, stared down into the ebony night, straining for the sight of the ship lights at anchor in the bay. And suddenly, the dogs broke through the rocks to the clearing and Christophe leaped to his destiny. And the overseer came and saw that the cliffside was empty.
Hold it, guard. Hold up the dog.
He came this way. I saw him.
Yes, I saw him fall off the cliff.
Good. No more than he deserves.
Sure. We can tell Pharaoh that he won't even have to dig no grave.
And the hunters enjoyed their joke, and they didn't hear Christophe gasp for air as he came to the surface, flutter for an instant, and then swim off in the direction of a sloop that lay inside the bay. He pushed towards it with his arms and legs and torso and fought to keep sight of the ship's light and finally pulled himself aboard, stood panting on the deck.
Your hands up, lad, if you don't want your head blown off.
Oh, is this the
you
ship?
You heard what the mate said. Your hands up.
What are you doing sailing aboard a ship like this?
I heard you were sailing for America.
You didn't hear we were taking on runways and stowaways. Back overboard with you.
I heard you wanted volunteers to fight in America. I'm volunteering.
Where? That sounds better. Much better.
You hit the right ship, lad. We're taking a regiment of slaves from Santo Domingo into Savannah for the siege. They've all volunteered. They're under the Count Artong.
Yeah, come along. Come below and meet him. Monsieur le Count, we've got another recruit.
Ah, bien, très bien.
He swam all the way out into the bay. He must be strong.
Can you handle a gun?
I could, monsieur.
We'll take you.
Good. Come along, lad. This way to your quarters.
He was taken down into the crew's quarter of the ship and met slaves from every island in the Caribbean. And as the ship set sail for Savannah, Henri Christophe was on his first step in the long journey of freedom. And they sailed into Savannah Harbor and were baptized in cannon fire. He slashed through siege line with tall black soldiers from Martinique, grizzled buccaneers of France, and lean-faced farmers of this new United States, dying together with queer fraternity for the thing they wanted most, liberty. And when the cannons were quiet and the living volunteers were gathered back into the belly of the boat, the Count had a message for the slaves.
Men, your attention. The leaders of the new states have asked me to give you their deepest thanks for the splendid valor of your attack against Savannah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have extended the cause of liberty and independence to another section of the world. To me, they thank you.
Is that all, Count?
No. One minor point. I know many of you have been expecting to remain here or be returned to the islands as free men. But I must inform you that all who formerly belonged to French masters will be returned to French masters. There will be troops in the forts we dock in who will see that this is carried out. Gentlemen, I regret this, but liberty is an elusive thing.
And there was mutiny on the ship, and one slave named Dessalines crushed the skulls of two troopers, but the boat sailed on towards Santo Domingo. In the evening, the hurricane howling inside him, Henri went below to the brig to comfort Dessalines, who carried his hurricane in his fist.
I see your fists are still bleeding from the fight.
Pass on, thin man. Let me sit in peace.
Are you from Granada?
I said pass on.
Are you an enemy of the slaves as well as the masters?
I am the enemy of any who don't fight against slavery every day, everywhere, every time.
After
the Count's speech, you didn't raise a finger. I saw your mouth open and your heart sink. But you didn't take your fingers as I tried to do and throttle him this way.
With your fingers, just your fingers, you crushed the pin.
One day with these fingers, I'll crush the slave system, too.
If I could help you...
Pass on, I say. Get to the other end of the ship.
I'd like to be your friend.
I want no friend. Will you go, or shall I handle you as the belaying pin?
Yes, Gabe. You'd better leave Dessalines to his fist and his fever. He thinks there's no one brave enough to join him in the rebellion against slavery. He broods about it. Let him alone.
I'd like to join him.
Why not join me?
Where?
They are taking me to the island of Santo Domingo.
Yes.
It's my home. A rebellion ready to break out like an earthquake once the earth is shaken right. And there's those who can lead the slaves.
Who lead?
Who led the slave regiments of the British in Santo Domingo and Savannah?
We did.
When the time comes, we lead the slave army at Santo Domingo. Try to get ashore when we dock. Now, quietly, get on deck.
And Henri remembered when the boat docked inside the harbor at Santo Domingo. And Henri was called into the cabin of the Count.
Ah, come in. Come in, Henri.
You wanted me to stay on the ship after the others left. Why?
Why? Because I'd like to save your life, if possible.
Very considerate.
Yes. Yes, of course. Those who go on to the island go to masters. That's the only way they're allowed ashore. You, Henri, escape from another island.
I'll never go back.
Let me finish. I need money badly. If you let me act as your master, I'll sell you to someone in Santo Domingo who I believe will appreciate your value. Mm-hmm. That way, you keep your life a little longer and I earn a few francs. Agreed?
Have I a choice?
I thought you'd see it my way. Well, Henri, pour yourself a glass of wine. We'll drink to my future as general in His Majesty's army, and to yours.
As a slave.
As I've said, Henri, liberty is an uncertain thing. But with you, slavery, I think, will be even more uncertain. Ah, merci. Vive la liberté!
And before the night was over, the Count had come into the town and knocked on the door of an innkeeper of the port.
The sign reads closed for the night. Can't you read?
Can't you tell the voice of a friend, Monsieur Marco?
Oh, Count, one moment, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, but the governor's ordered us closed.
I didn't come to buy anything.
No?
As usual, I've got something to sell.
Now, you know I bought the liquor imports you brought in some time ago. I'm well stocked. Now, if you'll please leave before the governor's men see
you... Not before you see what I'm selling.
Oh, where's your stock?
Outside, waiting.
You left it outside for the first thief to come along.
No thief will touch him, Monsieur Marco.
What are you selling?
A slave.
Oh, you're in the traffic now, too.
All the world's in it.
Well, pass me by. I've got all the help I need.
This one's trained in masonry.
It makes no difference. I can't risk having another slave around. The island's nothing but a keg of powder. Each week, France sends troops to watch for slave revolts. They expect it. No, it's a risk I cannot take.
Could you risk having the governor know you've bought high-grade liquor tax-free from me?
Oh, you drive a hard bargain.
I need money to pay for my commission in His Majesty's Army.
How much?
I'd say something for my general's uniforms. 4,000 livres.
You intend to dress well for His Majesty's Army?
The best. Is he sold?
Sold.
Good.
Henri! Henri!
You call me, monsieur?
I want you to meet your new master, Monsieur Marco, of the wealthiest hotel in Santo Domingo. And so, Monsieur Marco, I've done my good deed for Santo Domingo.
And the boy who would one day be king stood and stared long at the innkeeper who owned him. And the innkeeper read his mind and said,
"The average lifespan for a slave on Santo Domingo is 4 years. You think of revolt, rebellion... But there has never been a successful slave revolt on this island. It's the richest colony in the New World. A nobleman who pushes his slaves to their capacity can get rich in 4 years and go back to Europe. Forget what you saw in America. I'll find a place for you in my stables."
In the stables, he shod the horses and walked them through the crowded ports to their rich owners, and his own nostrils quivered and sucked in the strange air of the island that was a paradise for masters and an inferno for slaves. And even in the confines of the stables, he sensed the uneasiness in the air, and the horses neighed nervously at night. A visitor came in one evening while he was grooming them.
Easy now, easy. One day, Henri, the only horses you'll shoe will be your own.
Cape. My good friend, Cape.
I've got another name. Forget the old name.
What is it?
You remember I said on the boat coming over, when the time comes?
Well?
The time is here.
How do you know?
Trust me, I've friends. Friends of mine are back from France. The Bastille's fallen. You must have heard of that.
A man does not get to hear much in the stables.
I'll be your ears outside the stables. You'll be my eyes inside.
What do you mean?
Watch the masters who come to your hotel. When I return, give me their names and how many slaves they own, so I can visit their plantations and spread the word.
If I can.
Why are you uncertain?
I don't know. Give me time. Time to get to know the island and the people.
Time? Time is on the side of the masters, not we who want to be free. If you want to join me, help me. Keep your eyes open. When you see the physician, follow him.
Who is
Henri?
That?
Henri!
Yes, Monsieur Marco.
Lord Kenton's waiting for his horse. Will you hurry?
Very well, Monsieur.
Then I won't bother you if you're busy, my friend.
You're smart. He works hard and doesn't like interruptions.
I see. If you ever need a doctor, Henri...
Me? I've never been sick.
Working on the anvil all day might make you sick. If so, I know a very good doctor.
Yes?
Toussaint Louverture. Every slave on the island calls him when there is sickness. They call him the physician. When you need him, send for him.
See here. Always working. Now get out.
I'll be going, monsieur. Remember the doctor, Henri.
The physician. Who is this Toussaint, Monsieur Marco?
Oh, a fellow who knows something of herbs and medicines. A slave on the Breda plantation. Good enough for slaves, I'd say. But you won't get sick, Henri. I'll take good care of you.
I'm sure you will, monsieur.
And Henri, by the way.
Yes?
I don't know whether you've noticed it or not, but there's a growing restlessness over the island.
Is that so?
They say a group of conspirators are helping the slaves, going around from plantation to plantation, making their contacts.
Oh?
Hereafter, I'll transfer you to the hotel's billiard rooms. You're not likely to come in contact with any messengers there. You hear me?
I hear you, monsieur.
Well, you can move into your new job immediately.
And the boy finished his job of grooming the horses, was dressed and taught new duties in the billiard room. And each day he racked up the nobleman's score with his stick, while the nobleman spoke of slaves and sales, of goods and gold, of ships and parties. And the boy who was destined to be king listened and watched and listened.
Boy, stop daydreaming. What's my score?
Oh, I'm sorry, monsieur. You've run to 16, 22 gold.
16, you say, boy? No, 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 that's my score.
I don't believe so, monsieur.
Well, I believe so. I believe you've slept and missed my rally.
I did not do that, monsieur.
You're calling me a liar?
Well, I know your score.
And I know a slave's place. There, you figure. And again.
The butt and
there.
The butt and the stick rose and fell. Rose
that to me,
fell.
Will you?
This exercise was going on, and the Duke was finally getting tired of it, and the innkeeper came and interrupted the fun.
Here now, messieurs. Don't strike him again.
He called me a liar. Everyone here heard him.
Well, he's unconscious.
He's lucky to be alive. Teach your slaves better manners, Marco, you understand?
Well, I'll teach him. If he lives.
Oh, he's not too sick. His eyes are still open. Call your doctor.
No.
You see, he's still conscious. Nothing wrong at all. Nothing wrong.
And the noblemen went back to their game, minus their scorekeeper. And the innkeeper brought in the physician, the doctor of the slaves.
You, Henri Christophe.
Who is that knows my name? Who are you?
I'm the one they call the physician.
I'm well. There's nothing a physician can do for me.
You have a sickness that's peculiar to the slave system, my friend.
Yes?
I've diagnosed your case, and I feel I have the cure.
What do you prescribe?
Freedom.
Freedom?
Speak under your breath, not above it.
When do I get the prescription?
When you are ready to take it. It's a strong medicine.
When do you deliver?
When you hear the roll. The drums from the mountains. It will be time to find your weapons. Join the physician. And drink your prescription. It will be a long and bitter draft. You may die before you finish it.
Henri! Oh, doctor. Is he any better?
I believe he soon will be, monsieur.
Oh, good. How long will it take?
Oh, not very long now, monsieur. I think Henri Christophe has passed through the critical stages of his illness. Soon he'll get upon his feet and walk. And no man in Santo Domingo shall walk above him.
And the boy who was destined to be king listened long for the drum beats from the mountain. And they came, and they rolled him into a kingdom, and to his death. And they say that at twilight, King Christophe still walks the ramparts, retraces the steps he took to the throne, searches for the step that was fatal, and the mistake that led to the grave. They say in the lonely citadel, King Christophe still retraces his steps.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of Part 1 of Black Hamlet, the story of King Henri Christophe of Haiti.
Destination Freedom, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 14, 1949, a radio series hailing from WMAQ in Chicago and never heard nationally, although on radio during its golden era, one of the most important shows for African Americans, as its nearly all-black cast was the first to be heard on radio in a dramatic capacity, standing itself apart from other nationally heard shows which featured characters who were supposed to be African-American but played by whites. The program was broadcast in Chicago from June of 1948 through August of 1950. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lifonier. Now time for part one of two of the USS Boise, the story on the Man Behind the Gun series, a World War II show from CBS, heard on March 21st, 1943.
Belgian National Watch Company presents The Man Behind the Gun, dedicated to the fighting forces of the United States and the United Nations, and presented in the hope that these authentic accounts of men at war will bring you a better understanding and deeper appreciation of the job being done by our fighting forces everywhere in the world.
Tonight, the man behind the gun is the chief bosun's mate, the gun pointer on the United States cruiser Boise. This day began like any other lazy, sunny day at sea in the South Pacific. Nothing unusual about it, October 11th, 1942. Just another day, Jap hunting in the Pacific. Your job is to stop the Japs from reinforcing their men on Guadalcanal. Three times you've gone north after them. Never a contact. This is the fourth time. And, brother, this is it. But you don't know that yet. Just now, you're sick of running back and forth.
You know, Scotty, I've been north so many times, I feel like a commuter. Nothing to show for it but goose eggs.
You and me both, Chief. I got bunions on my whatsit from sitting waiting for something to cross my sights.
Yeah, ain't it the truth?
The ship's in condition Baker, which means battle stations for every man on watch. The Boise's ready to start shooting at the drop of a Jap. You don't wander far from your post when you're in condition Baker. Right now, you're inside the turret. It's a little stuffy here, but cooler than outside in the glaring sun. You're just sitting there batting your gums when a couple of the boys come in.
Hiya, Pappy.
Hiya, Chief.
That's Johnson. He's just had another baby. He heard about it just before you left the New Hebrides.
Think we'll hook up with the Japs today, Chief?
Yeah, never can tell. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, me too. They told me when I come out that this ocean is lousy with Japs. Boy, it sure is lousy without them. I get sick of nothing to do.
You'll get over that. Don't kid yourself. Them Japs know how to fight.
Oh, the Admiral will now deliver a lecture on his long years of experience in fighting off the entire Jap Navy single-handed.
All right, kid around if you want. When Jap shells start falling around us like confetti, remember what I said.
I got no respect for them. You know what I heard? I heard them squints live on rice and fish. I got no respect for them.
They do okay on rice and fish. They do okay.
Oh, yeah? Well, let them come around. Every one of them. Every fish eater in the Pacific. They'll give the fish a chance to get even.
The fish will get sick.
Hey, not to change the subject or anything, but what's that you got there, Johnson?
Oh, that's a picture of my kid. The oldest one.
Oh, yeah?
I kind of thought I'd paste it up in the bulkhead, if nobody minds.
Go ahead. Who minds? Let's see it.
Let me have a look at that.
Gee, good-looking mug, ain't he?
They all look alike, don't they? How would you
look
know?
Look at the muscles on him, would you? Takes after his old man.
Oh, he's a nice kid. He's kind of funny, though. He's got funny ideas. You can't figure him out all the time.
No?
Oh, he has funny ideas. The last time I was ashore, I took him to see the circus. He was only about 2 years old then, maybe a little more. He takes one look at the elephants and he says, "Daddy, I'm going to go home now." He wouldn't stay. He takes one look at the elephants and he says, "Daddy, I want to go home now." All right, I thought it was kind of cute. Especially from a 2-year-old.
Yeah, real snapper, like Fred Allen.
Don't pay any attention to those wax, Pappy. What do they know about kids?
I know all I want to know.
Well, anyways, I thought I'd paste up his picture.
Sure. The only thing is, there ain't much room left. Well, one of the girls will have to come down. Who's it going to be?
Look, how about Hetty, Chief? I don't know what you see in her anyhow.
No? Listen, she's the reason it's so hot in here. Nope, not Hetty. How about Rita?
Hey,
wait a minute. I know. This one. She ain't fit company for a 2-year-old anyhow.
Hey, listen, Chief, I ain't 2 years old. You ain't gonna take her down, are you? Not feed her.
What are you kicking about? That picture was taken 25 years ago. She don't look like that now.
Who cares what she looks like now? Look what she looked like then.
All right, you want it, you can have it and drive yourself crazy for all I care. But Johnson's kid goes up in that spot right there. That's just to remind us we all got home somewhere. And kids, some of us, that we never seen.
That's the way the day goes by. Just standing by in condition Baker, waiting. But in the afternoon, things start to pick up. You're beginning to get close to the Solomons. And at 3 o'clock, 1500 Navy time, the bullhorn pops off.
Stand, Parsons. Stand by to launch aircraft. Stand by point of stop and catapult.
Well, here we go, Scotty.
Looks like it. Hope the boys can scare up some business. What good does it do to be the best gunner in the Pacific Fleet if you ain't got nothing to shoot at, I always say.
Oh, yeah? Well, come on, Daniel Boone. Let's go watch them push the pretty airplanes into the wide blue skyway.
Oh, if we go into the wide blue skyway.
Hey, listen, Admiral. That's the Army Air Corps song. This is the Navy. N-A-V-Y.
It's only a song.
Never mind. You want to sing it? Go join the Army. If they'll take you.
They take me. Don't worry about that.
Listen, they'll take anybody. As long as you're warm.
From the top of the director turret, you watch them swing the starboard catapult out toward the sea. There's a plane on each catapult.
Stand by the start engine.
Now the pilots are coming up from below, fastening their helmets and crooking their legs to make the parachute harness fit right. The deckhands nearest them give them an okay signal, and you yell,
find us something to shoot at, sir.
Anything at all, Lieutenant?
Start engine. Stand clear. Turn over.
The propellers are whirling disks of light as the pilots climb aboard, settle down, and fasten their safety belts. And the planes strain and rock against the catapult rigging as the cruiser presents its stern to the wind. The man stands by the firing mechanism that shoots the planes into the air like shells from a cannon.
Stand by the launch. Watch the signal from the starboard plane.
All eyes are on the cockpit of the starboard plane, waiting for the launching signal from the pilot. You can see him put his head back against the cushion that keeps his neck from being broken by the fast takeoff. Then, after a second, his hand goes up.
Launch the starboard.
He's off. Dips toward the sea as he leaves the snapping catapult and then rises up and away. Now the cruiser heels over sharply and presents the port catapult to the wind.
Stand by the launch port. Watch the signal.
Again, you watch for the pilot to give the launching signal. You're thinking of the jolt he gets when that firecracker goes off in the catapult. In less than 30 feet, he's going 80 miles an hour. That's some pickup, brother. The pilot's hand goes up.
Launch the port.
Planes dwindle toward the north, far ahead of the task force, ranging the ocean and looking for the enemy. And that's okay with you. As far as you're concerned, the sooner you find them, the better. Anyhow, you feel all right now. You have that slight tenseness you always get after the planes take off. Any minute now, they may flash the word that the enemy has been spotted. Back aft on the port side of the superstructure is the guy who passed that word. The radio man, who sits all day long with an ear cocked to the static-filled speaker, listening. Always listening. And every 2 minutes, typing out his report.
Time, 1546. No signal.
It goes on like that for him. Minute after minute, hour after hour. Waiting for word out of the Pacific sky.
Time, 1548. No signal.
Baker,
signal coming in strong. Urgent.
Baker.
Stand by.
Radio to control. Radio to control.
Control I.
Message received from scouting mission. Enemy task force sighted 90 miles north and west of Point Z. Following course 150. Speed 15. Five cruisers, seven destroyers, and a number of transports. End of message.
There it is, Captain. We've got the hammerheaded little sneaks.
Yeah, they don't turn around and go back to Tokyo.
They won't get away this time.
I hope the OTC got that message the same as we did. Have the signal bridge stand by for a blinker message from the flagship.
Aye, aye. Control the signal bridge.
Signal bridge, aye.
Stand by for blinker signal from flagship.
Aye, aye, sir. He's working us now.
Far across the water, you can see the flickering flashes of light from the signal bridge of the task force commander's vessel.
Signal bridge to communications officer.
Communications, aye.
Message on blinker 2 from OTC. Stand by to execute column left, 60 degrees.
Very well. Acknowledge.
Aye, aye, sir.
Blinker tube signal, sir. Stand by to execute column left, 60 degrees.
Very well. Quartermaster, stand by for full left rudder, 60 degrees to course 220.
Full left, 60 degrees, course 220. Standing by, sir.
Signal to communications.
Communications, aye.
All units standing by. Blinker from flagship. Column left, 60 degrees. Stand by. Execute.
Execute.
Full left, 60 degrees.
Execute.
Aye, aye, sir.
Now all the ships in the column heel over sharply and turn toward the position of the enemy, 160 miles away. You're going in at last.
Here we go. 8 hours from now, those Japs will find out who's boss in the Pacific.
It's getting dark now. The sun is going down into the ocean. Only a few men on the ship know that the enemy has been spotted, but everyone aboard feels an increased tension. That sharp turn and speed up means something. And every man Jack aboard has a pretty good idea of what.
Think we're engaging, Chief?
Yeah, looks like it, Scotty. Yeah, we'll soon know. As soon as they blow general quarters, we'll know. If they set material condition affirm, we're in.
And so you sit there, waiting for the sunset and general quarters. If they set condition affirm, every man at his battle station until further notice, if they set condition affirm, you're headed for action. And so you watch and wait as the sun burns red and dim on the horizon. And then suddenly, it's gone.
All hands, man your battle stations on the double. Set material condition affirmed. Set condition 1 watches.
There it is. Material condition affirmed. You're going in. Now the ship boils with life. Every hatch is erupting men like a volcano, and the gun turrets and directors are swarming with hard-eyed sailors. No more sitting around now. No more thinking about climbing coconut trees in the New Hebrides. No more scuttlebutt about the girls in San Diego. From now on, anything that crosses the telescopic sights of the cruiser gets hot steel poured into it.
Here we go, Scotty. Good luck, kid.
Same to you, Chief. Look out, Tojo. Here comes the Boise.
Now the decks are clear and silent. Everywhere, men are standing quietly by the guns and the searchlights and the sonic detectors and the battle phones, waiting to check in at stations. You scrooge into the metal plow seat of the telescopic sight and slip on your flashproof gloves and helmet over the telephone headset. And then you call control.
Control. Director one testing. Control. Director one testing.
Control, aye.
Thank you.
Then from the gun turrets fore and aft, the reports start coming to you, sitting there at the firing keys of the 15 big guns.
Director one from turret one, manned and ready.
Aye, aye.
Turret two, manned and ready.
Aye, aye.
Turret three, manned and ready.
Aye, aye.
Turret five, manned and ready.
Aye, aye.
Turret four, manned and ready.
Little eight, turret four, get on the beam. Aye, aye, turret four. Control. Director one, manned and ready.
Very well. All stations. Emergency control left, aye. Emergency control forward, aye. Plotting room, aye. Repair party, aye.
It goes on from station to station, all over the ship, until every gun and post and man is accounted for. All hands are at battle stations. The ship is ready for instantaneous action. It's dark now. The night has closed down around the task force like a blanket. By the silvery light of the rising moon, you can dimly make out the other ships of the column. And their boiling phosphorescent wakes are like rivers in the ocean. They're getting close to Guadalcanal, and the order goes out from control.
Put shells in the hoist! Fill the hoist!
Down below on the shell deck, the sweating petty officer yells to his men. The gleaming cylinders are fed to the waiting hoist, and the flashproof door is turned as they disappear upward. Farther down in the guts of the ship, far below the waterline, the bosun of the handling room is doing his job.
Break up powder and fill the hoist!
And his men open up the cans of powder and feed the silken bags of high explosive to the waiting hoist. Up above, you sit there with your eye glued to the up and down line of the pointer telescope. Scotty sits beside you. He's the trainer. The line on his telescope goes from one side to the other. It's your job to see that his line and your line cross on the center of the target. When they do, you press two firing keys with your thumbs and all 15 guns of the main battery go off in salvo. And they hit where they're aimed.
Shell and powder up in turret one.
Aye, aye.
Powder and shell up in turret two.
Aye, aye. Load.
Powder and shell up in turret three.
Aye, aye. Load.
Powder and shell up in turret four.
It's adding up now.
Aye, aye.
Everything is ready.
Load.
From now until powder the battle's over, the guns five will be fired and aye, loaded aye, and pointed and trained load in one smooth, continuous action. Once you press those two firing keys, the light cruiser Boise and all its crew will act as one well-running machine, a machine gun.
All guns and main battery, man, loaded, laid, ready, sir.
Very well. Stand by. Reports are coming in now from the flagship. Enemy is reported at 20 miles south of Point Z. Range is closing rapidly.
Now you tune in on the electrician circuit to the searchlight bridge where the smoke watch is stationed.
The smoke watch man is up there to watch for fire the length of the ship. Actually, he acts as a running commentator on the progress of the battle so the men below decks will know what's going on.
Light bridge from director. Can you see anything yet, Money?
The enemy isn't in sight yet, but I can see Savo Island and Cape Esperance. Just barely. Very picturesque. It's amazing how the blueness of the mountains is accentuated.
You're nuts. That guy talks like a travelogue. I ask him if he can see any Japs, and he tells me about the scenery.
He reads too much.
Range of the night is 20,000 yards. Wind relative from bearing 280. Speed 20. It is now exactly 2348 minus 10 seconds.
Automatically, you note down the time minus and the range five. Of the night. The distance you can see in the light of the moon. Nearly 2,400 hours. Midnight. The tension is terrific. Somewhere around here is a Japanese task force. You feel like if you don't find it soon, you'll blow your top. Then suddenly the ship heels over and turns away.
Hey, Chief, we're turning away. We're going back home.
What? They can't do this to me. The fourth time this week. Get right up to where they live and then turn around and go home. My Godfrey in a bucket!
You take off your crash gloves and mask and throw them on the deck in a blind fury of resentment. You're cursing the day you ever went to sea. When suddenly the loudspeaker pops off.
Action, stop it!
There it is. The enemy's in range. You jam your eye into the lens of your telescope, waiting for the lookout to report.
Enemy in range now. 2 points off the starboard, and there are plenty of them.
Estimated range of enemy craft, 18,000 yards. Target angle, 3-0. Speed 2-0.
They're still too far away to show in your telescope, but you've got to get ready for them. And even before the order comes through, you start swinging the guns in their direction.
Control to directors. Train on 2 points off the starboard.
Director one, searching 2 points off starboard.
Scotty is frantically whirling the hand wheel that raises and lowers the 15 guns of the main battery. Johnson is working another wheel. And you know that down on the main deck, those murderous turrets are swinging swiftly on their barbettes. 15 big guns searching the night for a target. You sit there and peer through your telescope for the first sight of the enemy.
Range 15500. Time is 2350.
10 minutes of 12. Not long to go now.
Range 15000. Range is closing fast. Range 14500.
Won't be long now, Scotty.
No. Fire a box of cigars if we hit the first one we shoot at.
That's a deal.
Range 14000. Time is 2352. Range 13500.
Daddy, I want to go home now.
Range 13000.
They're only elephants, sonny.
Range 15000. Closing. Range 12000. Time is 2354.
You're still peering through the telescope. Now, very dimly, you see a light gray spot on the lens.
Range.
Then another. It's
one,
them. Five of them. Big ones. Japs. You can see them now.
Target sighted. Bearing 225. There they are, Scotty. Pick them up. Right, right, right. Steady, steady, steady. Left, left, left. On target. Mark, mark, mark.
Train them on target.
Director one, on target.
Are you on the target?
I'm on five targets.
Well, pick out the biggest one and stand by to commence firing.
Pick up biggest target. Left a little. Left, left, left. Mark.
Through your sights, you center the crosswires of the sight on the largest enemy
mark.
Ship. Then you pick up the two firing keys. This is it.
Director one, on target.
Open shutters. Commence firing.
Commence. Commence. Commence.
The black of the night is cracked open in a white blaze as 15 guns let go all at once. And the searchlight bridge is illuminating the target. You just have time to see that it's a big Jap cruiser before it disappears behind mouthless spurts of water flung skyward by the bursting shells. The first salvo has found its target.
Check fire. Spot one.
Check, check, check. Spot one. Spot one.
Up 1-0-00. Right 0-0.
Up 1-0-00. I right 0-0.
Right, right, right.
Resume fire.
Resume fire.
Now the shells are hitting the enemy cruisers. You can see them swimming through the air like little bugs and then disappearing into the Jap warship with a searing red blast of flame. Over your headset, you can hear the smoke watch on the light bridge describing the sight for the men below decks.
It's a beautiful ship. I can see it very plainly in the light. It's very white. Seems to have a bulge of some kind along the bow. Oh, it's a very beautiful ship.
Never mind what it looks like. Are we hitting it? Come on, talk!
Ah, give the kid a chance. We're hitting it, Pappy. We're hitting it every shot.
The thumbs are still pressed down on the firing keys, and the guns are firing as fast as they can be loaded, and that's plenty fast. The shells are like tracer bullets from a machine gun, pouring into the enemy. And then suddenly the Jap ship erupts into flame from stem to stern.
That's it! That's it! Burn, you buggers! Burn!
We got him! He's rolling over! He's going down! That's number one for the Boise!
Number one for the Boise. One down and six to go. Next week, we'll tell you how the Boise got those six and nearly got hers. Next week at this time, we invite you to be with us again when the man behind the gun continues the story of the heroic action of the United States cruiser Boise.
The Man Behind the Gun on Tuned to Yesterday, episode one of two of that storyline from CBS, heard on March 21st, 1943. And we'll be wrapping up the storyline next week at the very same time on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us then as we conclude these great stories from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.